Welcome to Combo Smite, your weekly battle report podcast for casually serious players.
Welcome to Combo Smite. My name is Mark. I play Signar and Menoth.
And I'm Nick, and I play Retribution, Legion, and Mercs.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a golden age of War Machine we are living in. Our news and announcements used to be things like, you know, once every 2 months, we'd be like, hey, maybe there's a new model coming out. There has been so much stuff coming out. Oh my God, it's hard to keep track. But, you know, good problem to have. So this podcast is going to be completely devoted to the news and announcements that was revealed at SmogCon or around SmogCon. That was this weekend. So by the time you hear this, you know, ancient history. But for those of you who aren't right on the cutting edge of all the War Machine news.
3 days isn't exactly ancient history.
No, that's true. I was trying to be a little bit, not quite that sarcastic.
Oh, I just got my first angry text from Adam.
Oh, there we go!
Nick is supposed to be... Only 40 minutes before I said I was going to be there.
Exactly. Nick is supposed to be playing board games with Adam 40 minutes from now. So we're trying to squeeze in all this information before then. So you can expect to go to a 45-minute podcast, folks.
No worries.
Yeah. So before we get into that, let's talk about news and announcements unrelated to the news and announcements. If you guys want to get a hold of us, if you disagree with anything we say, or some of the things we say, or nothing of what we say, just want to voice your support, at ComboSmiteNick, at ComboSmiteMark, ComboSmite@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel or our Twitch stream, and you can find us on the Private Press forums from time to time, although the forums are getting to be a bit of a cesspool. Just a warning. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, there's ups and downs.
Yes, let's go with that. Anyways, get a hold of us. Please do let us know what you think. And on that note, Kasim has recently started recording his own weekly microcast. The last one was only about 5 minutes. I don't suspect they will be much longer than 10 going forward. Those air on Wednesdays. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it last week or you didn't know about it, I do recommend you check it out. It's kind of just like a little nibble of strategy and discussion specifically about his Scorn lists and the people who he played against in the preceding week.
Yeah,
and
like, usually he plays one game a week, so it's going to be like a 5-10 minute cast kind of thing. But once in a while, I mean, when he goes to a tournament or something, it'll probably be a bit longer. It's kind of a nice little thing. It's nice to have, you know, some other people stepping up and producing some content for the podcast rather than having just Mark being the one propping this thing up all the time. Yeah, it's cool. It's nice. We'll see how long it lasts, because it's not easy to do a weekly podcast, and Kasim's just starting, so we'll see how it goes.
Yes, he's also a little bit on the Kasim is not what you call a planner. He's very much a seat of his pants kind of guy. So
impulsive,
I'll be curious.
Yeah, sure. Impulsive.
Impulsive. There we go.
This entire podcast idea that he had, he basically whipped it up in 2 days and just did it.
In his defense, this entire podcasting that we've been doing now for almost 3 years was basically me sitting down on a Wednesday saying, hey, Nick, we should record a podcast. And by Thursday, we were doing it. So, you know, humble beginnings.
It can go either way.
Last but not least, do check out the Combo Smite store. You can find a link to it on the Combo Smite website, combosmite.com. We have some new swag, which is not really new anymore. It's been out for a couple months now, but specifically hashtag team names of Team Nick.
We should change it up, actually. We should. I specifically request that we have polos in the store.
Polos?
Yeah, I want a polo.
Okay, it'll be done. if someone would like to buy Nick a polo, just have to buy, generally, 8 polos buys one us one, so
there we go. Nice.
Okay, so that's enough of that nonsense. Let's move on to the actual meat and potatoes of the podcast. There are two aspects that we're going to be talking about. The first is the newly released, let's call them spoilers, specifically towards Steamroller.
So there are a lot of rumors swirling around about what is going to be changing in Steamroller 2017.
Yep.
To avoid mass panic and pandemonium, Will Pagani got on the forums and basically set the record straight. This is what is, like, with just kind of a generic description of the direction going forward for 2017. And so we're just going to... We want to talk about that and just see what's up.
Was it Pagani? It's so hard to keep straight which Will is Will.
It was Pagani, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of Wills.
Schick, Hungerford, and Pagani.
And Schoonover.
Schoonover? I don't know Schoonover.
Oz.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
And there might be more. Who knows?
Either way.
They're multiplying. Someone poured water on them.
So there's the Steamroller stuff, and then there's, of course, the Grimkin faction. So we're going to talk about the Grimkin second. We'll start off with the Steamroller stuff. Let's start off with the basics. Steamroller 2017, as they announced previously, would be released at Lock and Load. I still don't like this decision in Privateer Presses, but I have accepted it. It's just the way it's going to go, which means that we have another month until it comes out.
Did they say that? That'll be released at Lock and Load?
Yeah. So Lock and Load is now the flagship of the new Steamrollers.
Yeah, but keep in mind, though, like the beta is going to be out there for everyone to see long before that. So, I mean, it's not like it's going to blindside anybody, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, the beta won't necessarily be identical to what is going to drop at Lock and Load, but it's going to be mostly the same.
Yeah. All right, so what Pagani talks about, he starts off by commenting on that the overarching changes are that they're completely overhauling the Steamroller from 2016 to 2017. They've scrapped all of the scenarios except for one, and that one is not Incursion.
Recon.
So that's actually... yeah, it's not Incursion, which is important to me, because I hate Incursion. I have hated Incursion since we started playing Steamroller, and the fact that it has finally died a horrible, mangled death is a very positive sign to me.
Well, and there's a very specific reason, I think, why it has died, because it only has one scenario element, which is flags, and that's changes. So one major change that Will talks about is that the scenario scoring is drastically changing.
Correct.
In that... In Steamroller 2017, you score from scenario elements, but only certain things can score on certain elements. So circle zones will only be scorable by warrior models right now, units and solos. Mm-hmm. Rectangular zones will only be scorable by warjacks, warbeasts, and battle engines. And then flags can only be scored by warcasters or warlocks.
And they're removing the dominate aspect from 2016. So your warlock or your warcaster will no longer score additional points for dominating a scenario element. However, they're the only models on the table that can control multiple elements simultaneously, which means that we're going to start seeing scenarios with flags inside zones or zones inside zones. So maybe, you know, they'll put a rectangular zone inside one of the circular zones.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can expect a lot of weird stuff like that. Like, for example, a good, great example of what you just said is like a flag inside a zone. So if your caster's on the flag, but then you also have jacks in the zone, you'll be able to score 2 points on that or something like that. And so the whole scoring structure is completely changing. You no longer win when you hit 5 points. You win when you have 6 more points than your opponent, which is weird to me. But, I mean, again, the whole... We don't know anything right now. Like, we have such a small piece of the puzzle that really it's way too early to make any snap judgments. I mean, this sounds weird, and it sounds cool. We'll see how it goes. I mean, but in theory, what it means is that scenario scoring is going to be much higher, and that, like, you could potentially have a game go to, like, 10-8 kind of thing.
Right.
and it will never stop because you need to win by 6.
Speaking of never stop, games are now going to have a variable game length. And so specifically what happens is that starting on round 5, I assume second player's round 5, but we'll have that confirmed.
It is after the second player's turn on round 5, they'll start rolling.
So you roll a dice, and on a 5+?
I don't know. But
there's some random element.
But there's some random element that basically it starts on the end of round 5. So after the second player's turn on round 5, they'll roll, and then there will be a chance. I believe it's a 1 in 3 chance of triggering the end of the game, and that'll happen again on round 6. But at the end of round 7, the game will be cut, no matter what.
No matter what. Yeah.
This is definitely the single most controversial thing that has been revealed about Steamroller 2017 right now. Most people are saying it's either mostly irrelevant. Or stupid. but there are some people that are in support of it. I don't know. I'm pretty mixed on it. I have a knee-jerk like gag reflex to this rule completely. Yeah. Like it sounds really bad. But again, this is just knee-jerk. So, I mean, there's still time to process this. We're going to do testing, obviously, when it comes out and see how we really feel. But right. Knee Jerk is really, really bad to this one. And the worst part is, like, Pagani's, like, defending it. He's like, yeah, but don't worry, guys. You know, we did a whole ton of playtesting, and only two games ever actually this came up in. So begs the question, if only two games this ever actually played a role in, why even have it?
Yeah, and see, that's my exact argument, where he's saying, like, oh, we've done dozens, it's only happened twice, and you're like, well, if it's only happened twice, get rid of it. Like, if you're really concerned about the game ending after five turns being so bad, just make it end after six turns. But this variable aspect of it, like Nick has said, you know, some people hate it, some people say it won't make a difference. I have not heard a single person say that this is a good idea.
There are some people championing it.
I'm sure, I haven't seen any of them. And I am a little bit more cautiously optimistic. I'm like, okay, maybe it will be ignorable. But my major concern is that one of the things that Pagani, now that I know it's Pagani brought up, is that this is designed to help tournament organizers end their events faster.
Well, I think,
and I cannot for the life of me figure out how making it longer will make an event end faster. I just don't get it.
What do you mean make it longer?
Well, because if the game ends up going to seven, like... It just,
But I mean, remember, you're still restricted by your death clock. That's still part of the game,
right? But
all it is that if you're, I don't know. I think it's really dumb. I think that death clock is the proper way to control this kind of thing. And if you really want tournaments to be shorter, make the death clock shorter. Not that I like that solution personally, because I'm slow as hell. But this is the thing is, you can have a game go to seven rounds in like an hour and a half, and then you can have a game be on round four after 2.5 hours. So like this is a very poor solution to that problem if that's really the reason why they're doing it. But I don't know. So anyway, the initial reaction to this is very, very bad. I want to be more cautious, because I can admit I was very wrong about pre-measuring, and so I might be wrong about this. We all might be wrong about it. Who knows?
Correct. So, as a tournament organizer, I am very cautiously optimistic. As a tournament player, I can't imagine it will make a big difference. But I play Signar, which means I play Sloan. I've either won after the end of turn three, or I've lost at the end of turn four. Like, that's as far as it goes.
Well, and that's basically the main thing, is that for the vast majority of games, this will not have an effect. But then the ones that it will affect, it's going to wreck those games. Because those games that do go to five or six or seven rounds, like, it's because something crazy is going on usually. You know what I mean? Like, it's usually because it's like a really tense game where it's two really strategic players that are playing really, really well and really, really cagey and having a really tactical game. And that it's going to basically just kill that kind of game. And that's really unfortunate. But again, I made emotional arguments like this about pre-measuring as well. So we'll see.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see. We've already talked about the scenario victories, the fact that it's no longer first to five wins. It's now first to six more than your opponent wins. There's been some muttering on the interwebs about the fact that this is going to encourage assassination-style lists, and that some people are saying this is a good sign for the factions that have been less popular because they may be more assassination-y.
Yeah, I mean, it does kind of make me think about that kind of thing. Like, Legion, for example, has really horrendous attrition right now. But they have assassination threats just coming out of every orifice. And it's kind of, it seems like... they might have been developed with 2017 in mind. I don't know how it's going to pan out, because we don't know anything about it yet. Yep. But that's very possible.
Seems promising. And last but not least, in this aspect, the terrain. So there are now going to be guidelines, which I imagine is going to be like, place a wall in this area, place a forest in this area. And...
I don't know. He's only been very vague about terrain thing. Basically, the Steamroller will include a terrain guide with guidelines on how terrain should be placed, but they were very unspecific about it, so I really don't know what to expect from that. But any more information that they can give to TOs to help them build boards that don't suck, I'm in support of. So.
Abso-fracking-lutely. As a TO that has to build boards... anything that makes it simpler for me to be able to just set up the board and then not have to keep changing it. Because one of the things they comment here is the fact that you set up the terrain, if you follow the guidelines, you will never actually have to touch the terrain over the course of an event, which is big, because as an EO, you know, a lot of times people will be like, hey, you know, this wall is too close to that objective, or this forest is in the middle of that zone, or whatever the hell.
But it isn't really that big a deal, honestly, but...
Sometimes it's
only a big deal when the terrain continually gets pushed to the edge of the board, and then eventually you have just a field of slaughter.
as we like to call it, a Signar map, yes?
Yeah, Signar tables, yes. And it just tends to happen sometimes in long events where, like, because various scenarios will get put on the board and then things will have to move around a bit and then eventually you just have this open field. A good judge will come to the table and actually, when they set the scenario, will put everything in the right spot. But, yeah. I mean, there's too much going on. That's all. You know.
The last event we ran at the game chamber was, oh God, like 10 tables. And it's really hard to keep an eye on what people are doing on their 10 tables. So. Mm-hmm. Anyways, all of these things are going into CID. Nick, what's CID?
That is the Community Integrated Development Program.
Yes, the dynamic errata thing.
No, this is the new system that they're going to be using to beta test new models.
Very cool.
And so in theory, every model that's going to come out in the near future is going to go through this process where they're going to release the rules long before the model comes out, and we're going to have a chance to test it in the community and say, guys, you're morons. This is batshit broken, and things like that. And so, the first thing that's going to be tested in this way is going to be the Grimkin faction, actually.
Oh, cool.
They are going to be the first. The entire faction is going to. The rules are going to get released sometime. I don't know exactly when. And then they're going to be welcoming in all the community feedback they're going to get, which is going to be hilarious.
Yes, because most of it will be theory machined and not actually table machined, but.
Whatever. Yeah, that's definitely something that they're gonna have to look out for. But so we'll see how it goes. I mean, definitely they put table experience as a requirement for submitting stuff, but people are stupid, so you never know.
So the other comments, if you want to read Will's full, I don't want to call it diatribe, his full discussion, you can find it on Facebook. You can find it on Twitter. It's linked all over the place now. He talks about the fact that he wants to avoid the Denny 2 incursion games from Mark 2, which I think we can all fondly remember. Basically, Denny 2 would move up feet and then win. Haley's, we had a very similar game style.
Yeah, just a couple comments on just the whole scoring structure. Like, going from 5 points and you win to having to win by 6 definitely makes the world a much more difficult place for those control casters out there. You know, the Haley 2s and the Denny 2s of Mark 2, like, can't just move up feet and then auto-win kind of thing. Because you can't score 6 points in one turn. maybe you can in 2070, we don't know. But, it makes that kind of thing a lot harder. And, it's just...
It is interesting.
Scenario is going to be even more important than ever, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know specifically for Mark II, they had a Denny 2 map, which was like a layout where they could not put objectives, zones, or flags because Denny 2 would just be able to move up feet and win. And so they had to design the steamrollers around a very small handful of warcasters who could literally break the system. It's good that they are now... # design spacing such that they don't have to do that anymore, but that means that they've lost all of the combined experience of having done that for the previous steamrollers. So 2017 is going to be a brave new world in regards to steamroller, and I'm really curious to see what comes out of it. The community development should start in April, so we have a couple months of online rage and assaults before we actually get any real rules.
We'll see what happens.
Oh, so I guess the SteamRoller 2017 won't be out until May. Whenever the hell Lock and Load is. Honestly, I forget.
I think Lock and Load is July.
July? Okay, there you go.
So it won't be out until July. Like, it's a J month.
Okay, so that's it on the SteamRoller stuff. Let's move on to the Grimkin. Let us save all of our dear listeners some high school level... audiovisual club pain. The video that they showed at SmogCon is very enthusiastic. It is very heartfelt. It is really hard to watch.
Oh man, it was hard to watch. The acting was oof.
And just, and
the poetry, like the bad poetry is, oh my God, it's just hard to listen to. Like,
do you know what helped for me? I pictured
drinking? The protagonist. Was it heavy drinking?
Oh God, no. I pictured the protagonist from The Crow reading the poetry on the roof of a building, and that made it better. I was like, you know, if you think of it as a 90s era goth, then it's like, okay, you know, this is awful, but at least it's, you know, ironically awful. The video itself, if you mute it, it's Interesting. You get a lot of very quick snapshots of all the units. Some scrolls giving approximately the strengths and weaknesses of each. We're going to talk about that. But what we need to know as a fluff background is that the faction is called Grimkin. And they were minor deities that were cast out by Menoth, the god of man, and have now been brought back by... crap, how the hell do you say her name? The old witch.
Baba Yaga.
Zhivana Aga. Baba Yaga.
Yeah, basically.
Zhivana Aga. So Zhivana Aga has brought them back from wherever the hell they were banished to. And now they are helping, quote, purify, end quote, the world. And there's kind of this implied concept that they might actually be good guys that are trying to get rid of all the evil by some nonsense, but yeah, it's
by murdering it all.
By murdering it. God, what I miss most about Dungeons and Dragons? Forming a group of wandering hobo murderers and using that as heroics. Like, you got a problem? Let me stick a sword in it. The problem will be solved. The warcasters, or the warlocks, I should say, are called Defiers. Nick, you wrote here that one of them is Annie and Tibbers from League.
I copy and pasted someone from Facebook.
Okay.
I don't know
who Annie and Tibbers are.
If you don't know
what
something means, don't read it.
Okay.
Fair. I don't either. Fair.
All right. So let's start off with the war beasts. There are two heavy war beasts that have been shown. There's the Cage Rager, which has the upkeep assistance channeling an arcane vortex, and he probably spends souls in order to do this, and he might start with souls. If you look at the model, it's this big thing that looks like a monstrosity, literally a Cephalex monstrosity, with two cages hanging off of, I don't even call it a yoke, and in the cages are obviously corpses.
So it's slow and durable, has arcane support, upkeep assistance, channeling, arcane vortex. So it's definitely going to be soul-based.
Yeah. So be curious to see what that does. The other one is interesting. I forget what it's called, but is it here? No. Every time it kills
four of them?
Sorry?
Were there four beasts?
I think there's four beasts total. There's two heavy and there's two lights.
Okay.
But one of the lights we don't know about. So there's one of the heavies, basically every time it kills an enemy model, it gains a point of armor and strength. And I don't know if there's an upper limit on this, but the basic premise of it is that it looks like a character heavy, I'm guessing, and its cloak is made out of the skin of everything it's killed. And so every time it kills something, it adds on to its cloak, and that cloak makes it stronger and
harder. Okay. Yeah, this is the... it's an offensive heavy war beast. Gains strength and armor from enemy corpses. Okay.
Yeah, that's the one. So those are the two heavies. The one light we know of is called the Rattler. We know that it's an anti-infantry light war beast. It looks like... almost like a Crix Bonejack with claws.
Well, it kind of looks like a Wraith engine, actually, with skin.
Yes, it looks like a tiny Wraith engine. That was exactly what I was thinking.
They have another war beast that's like a wolf of some kind.
Yes.
Wolf-looking thing.
So the Rattler, the one that is the anti-infantry one that looks like the Wraith engine, also has Berserk, which is interesting, assuming it has actual POW on its weapons, which is always up for some debate. So we'll see.
Yeah, so, okay, war beast aesthetic, what do you think?
I like the look of the big guy with the cages. I think that's a beautiful model, and if they've done the sculpt well, where the cages don't have too much flash on them, I think they'll be stunning to paint. Other than that one, I hate all of them.
See, because I like the weird skin one, like the heavy that gains strength from corpses and stuff. I think that one looks kind of cool. Like, I like the sculpt.
Okay.
But the other two I really hate. So, yeah.
Okay. The wolf with a long
aesthetic.
Tongue.
That looks neat. Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. So those are the war beasts that we know of. There's probably going to be at least a couple more of each, but it will be a limited release. So I suspect you should be kind of... have an idea for like six heavies and six lights, or four heavies and four lights, and that's it.
Well, I mean, I suspect that what we see is what we're getting.
You think so?
Yeah.
Could be. Could be. That would make these guys even smaller than Convergence by a very significant very significant margin, though.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we don't really know, I guess.
Yeah.
There could be some surprises.
Okay. We also are aware of three units. Let me just double check that it's three. Yeah, so there's three units. The first of which is called the Hollowmen. So these are deserter infantry that have deserted other armies. The default unit are trenchers. The aesthetic is very trencher-esque. There is currently, although you won't be able to get it by the time this podcast comes out, there's an additional Hollowmen sculpt, which looks like the British Royal Guard with the big furry hats and the red uniforms. Because Smog Con takes place in London, England, I believe. It takes place in England, wherever.
Yeah, that's why. So I'm looking at the sculpts, the pictures they have. That's Party Fowl's posted on Facebook. It looks like they are kind of a mishmash of different units, kind of like Alexei and the Risen.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So I definitely see some trencher-looking dudes, and I see some Winter Guard-looking dudes.
Oh, cool.
And I also see some dudes look like pirates. And some guys that I can't really tell. But anyway, they look pretty neat. They, I don't know, who knows?
So they have Eyeless Sight, and they've got, quote, powerful recursion technology, end quote.
Which, if you're familiar with the Revenant crew of the Atramanius, then you know that's always going to be super strong.
Super unplayable, yes. it's going to be.
I mean, we have to actually know the rules before we can judge it, but.
Of course, yeah. Of course. I had the same thought, though, that when I heard powerful recursion, I'm like, okay, unplayable trash.
It looks like the rifles are going to be, like, range 10, pow 12s or something.
Maybe.
I had to guess.
Well, if they're military rifles, then they're ranged in POW 11s, which is, again, fine as long as they have CRAs. Yeah. POW 11s are surprisingly good, but again, we're going off of nothing for that.
We are.
We do know that the leader model, the guy with the lantern, is something significant to the unit, so I imagine the recursion is going to trigger off of him, and that he collects souls.
Yeah, who knows?
Corpses or something.
Who knows?
I do like the aesthetic of this unit, though. I think they look cool.
I think, yeah, I also do. I think they look cool as well. They remind me of Alexei and the Risen, which is one of my favorite units in the game.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm probably going to use them for. I will use them as Alexei and the Risen.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Alternate. Always need more sculpts for Alexei. All right, Nick, why don't you talk about the Dreadrots?
What are those?
There are the guys with the pumpkin heads.
Okay, so the pumpkin heads, they're a melee unit with Weapon Master. They collect corpses. But we don't really know what they do with them. It says they collect corpses for other friendly models.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. Maybe they feed them to the thing that collects skin to make it a higher
armor. They are all the models look. I mean, they are what they are. I don't. They're cartoony. I'm not a fan at all. But they're pumpkin head dudes, and they're all carrying sacks. Like kind of like the one press ganger dude who's carrying the sack.
Yep.
The
dude. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So it makes me wonder if they have something like Shanghai or like prep for surgery kind of thing.
Right.
Or if they just collect corpses and then maybe there's a mechanic where other models can take them or this model can, or this unit can give them kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, this is all speculation at this point.
Yep. But it's interesting. While I completely agree with you that the aesthetic is just not for me, whoever did the paint job on these guys did a phenomenal job. Like, you can actually see the glow coming out of their mouths and all that stuff.
No, yeah. I mean, the painting is always amazing.
Spectacular. Yeah. But yeah, no, the aesthetic is meh.
Yeah, not a fan.
All right, and the last unit we know about, I don't know if we know what they're called, but they're pigs, like squealing pigs, bipedal pigs, being carried around by dudes that are hunched over. So if you imagine a small-based Fatty McButterpants, that's these guys. Like, yeah, they're...
I couldn't find a picture of them. They're in the video. There is a picture. They show them in the video, but I couldn't find a picture of them.
Yeah, they're beautiful. The sculpt is beautiful in the sense that it's so ridiculous. It's wonderful. They're tough. They're quoted as being extremely durable. Again, who the hell knows what that means? But they have impervious flesh, which is not insignificant, and snacking and shield wall, which means that they could actually be pretty hard to take off the table. Depending on how fast they are, whether they have reach. They look like they have reach. They've got big honking pole arms, maces.
Well, I'll have to check them out later because I saw the sculpt briefly in the video, but I couldn't get a good look at it.
Yeah. And, they're stunning sculpts in the sense that they are beautifully done. I would never in a million years put them on the table personally, but that's just because they're not my aesthetic. In the same way that the pumpkin heads have beautiful paint jobs, these guys have got great sculpts, so. Yeah, big fat pigs with shields and pole arms being carried around by little dudes who are being punished for being gluttonous, apparently. That was their shtick. All right, Nick, the sexy tree.
Okay, this one is probably the coolest model that I've seen.
Agreed.
I really like the sculpt. So, okay, let's see. Hold on. Where's the description here? This is the Witchwood. She's a dryad with a tree solo lady. She's got teleport, some kind of powerful melee abilities, and she bewitches warrior models with her sexy lady bits.
Yeah.
I mean, the model is really, really gorgeous. It's clearly a sexy lady that bewitches people. She's holding an apple in her hand. Quite cool. Yeah,
yep. And the tree in the background's got like this giant gaping maw and these claw things. It's really cool.
I'm assuming that I'm not sure if they're gonna be two models or one. It's kind of hard to tell, but I guess like she's probably gonna have some kind of like influence type ability where she makes warriors attack each other, kind of thing. Or
as long as it doesn't suck.
And the tree is probably gonna be able to punch things as well with its powerful melee attacks, I assume.
I would assume.
Yeah, but anyway, this model's beautiful. This is a model I would consider buying just to have because it's cool.
I intend to buy two of them, one of which is going to have a sexy lady holding an apple, and one of which is going to have a sexy guy holding an apple, just
like
because
it.
I'm equal opportunity that way. But I have no intention of actually playing Grimkin. I think this is a great sculpt, and
I mean, even though so far, I'm not even remotely a fan of any of the aesthetic. For the most part, except for the hot chick, I would still consider playing the faction if it was like really cool rules wise.
Right.
And we just don't know enough right now for me to definitively say. But yeah, the aesthetic is not doing it for me.
Okay. The last of the solos is a four-armed pistol gun mage. The four-armed gun mage, and apparently it's. Got Black Penny, because it mentions Black Penny, but other than that, we don't know anything about it. It has a poisonous bite of some variety, or something poisonous. It mentions spiders. I think it's supposed to be like a spider that's got multiple arms.
I'm guessing it's going to be gunmage-style thing. It's going to have a couple shot types. One of them is going to be poison.
Yeah. And hey, if it gets four initial shots, even range 10 pow 10s, that's really damn good.
My guess is going to be it's going to be two shots with like snapfire or something.
It's not impossible. Not impossible.
But it could be just four shots as well. Four shots obviously would be way fucking better. But...
Yeah. You don't say. This is, out of the solos, my second favorite. Actually, out of the Unizan solos, my second favorite. It actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks pretty neat.
So. All right. So now we're on to the Warlocks. Of the five Warlocks that they say we will eventually have access to, they've only shown... there will be six, my apologies. Javanna Aga, that's the old witch, the new old witch, and five defiers. And of the five defiers, we've only seen three. So, Nick, why don't you talk about the child?
So this one definitely looks like a pretty cool concept for a caster. So it's, let's just see what the notes say. So she's the child. She was the first to rail against Menoth, a little girl with her like big monster beast pet.
Yes. Whose name is Dolly.
She has maximum. She has a offensive battle group, frontline brawler, and her arcana is that when you smash for toys, it sets enemy models on fire.
So very significant, something we haven't talked about. The Defiers, the five Warlocks, plus possibly Javanna Aga, who the hell knows, they do not get feats. Instead, they have these things called Arcana, one of which is always on. They have a Trump Arcana, so it's by default, they just get it. And hers is
cringingly named Trump Arcana.
What? Oh, yes, Trump. Anyways, so her Trump Arcana is that when you smash her toys, it sets enemy models on fire. So I imagine when you kill a war beast, there's an explosive burst or a flame burst or some such thing that would kind of suck. But I guess if it's on all the time, hey, what the hell?
We honestly don't know what these Arcana are going to do. Whether it's going to be something that it's going to be special rules that affect just their battle group, or if it's going to be special rules that affect their entire army. But it's some kind of thing that they have that they can do and. There's very little information given about them. But basically, they have these Arcana. They have three of them. One that, the Trump Arcana, and then two other ones they have that are triggered in the game by various effects. And they have these instead of feats.
And you choose the two Arcana that are triggered by in-game effects. So I imagine you're going to, each of them will have one Trump Arcana, and then there'll be a list of, let's be optimistic, six other Arcana, and every game you'll be like, okay, this guy will take Arcana 1 and Arcana 4 or whatever. And so when your opponent kills your objective, something happens. Or when your opponent shoots your warlock, something happens. Or who the hell knows. But could be interesting. Yeah, so the child is the great sculpt. The big gorilla thing with a little mask that's supposed to represent her doll.
We've just seen art, but it doesn't...
Did they
show a sculpt?
They showed a 3D render of her.
Okay, and, cool.
Yeah, she looks good.
I'll have to check it out then, because, the art looks awesome.
Yeah. So, the second one is called The Dreamer, which is a pretty lady floating on ribbons and moons and stuff. apparently, she transforms your models into pumpkins. So, if you watch the video, which, again, we do not recommend you do so, unless you hate your ears and your life, there's a scene with a Kador Man of War model moving close to her, and then there's, like, a little puff of smoke, and it's replaced by a stack of pumpkins. I don't know how the hell that would work in-game, but... Anyways, and
does
her
she come
Arcana,
with smoke bombs?
That would, yeah, hey, there's an idea. It's a Darkwing Duck gun. You pull the trigger and this little puff of smoke happens. So
nice.
Yeah. God, I'm old. Anyways, her Arcana is called All Fall Down. So when an enemy destroys stuff, they are knocked down and fall asleep. Again, the fluff says that she makes people have naps.
It's all
and manifest phantasms from enemies. Yeah, it is a great sculpt though. Again, it's a neat aesthetic. The Heretic.
Heretic is a former priest king holding up a mask using Menoth's power. I'm not sure what that means. It's fluff, obviously.
Yeah.
He's a big dude with a creepy face. He turns enemy magic against his enemies with a wave of his hand.
Yeah.
Which is pretty... it could be like a Haley 2 Mark 2 type ability where he can replicate the enemy spell.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I literally never saw him use it.
I used it once. Yeah. I used it all of once.
It says that he supports infantry well and his Arcana godlike. The army gains bonus to hit and damage against stuff that destroys friendly models. So it's kind of, it's interesting. These Arcana are really going to be interesting for sure. Like I am very, very... looking forward to finding out exactly how these things work.
It is interesting that, you know, instead of having a one-turn massive game-changing state, that these guys just have constant slight tweaks to the default rules where, you know...
I mean, I'm not even sure if they are constant or if they're just, like, mini-feats. Well, like, maybe they just give them 3 mini-feats and that's just their thing. I don't know. We literally know nothing about them, so... Do we?
Well, you say literally nothing, and we obviously know more than nothing, but I get what you're saying. Yeah, we don't know anything definitive. We're going by fluff and by video, which is always risky.
especially that kind of video.
Yeah. So the other two Defiers, the other two Warlocks in the faction that we don't know anything about besides their artwork is the Wanderer and the King of Nothing. You can see the pictures of them. The King of Nothing looks beautiful, and I love his name, the King of Nothing. The Wanderer looks like an adventurer with a staff, and the King is an old guy sitting under an apple tree with a single apple directly over his head, which is, again, kind of cute. Last but not least, Jivana Aga, the old witch. So the new old witch.
Old witch too. She actually does have a feat, a traditional feat. She is both a Grimkin warlock and a Kador warcaster, which is really cool.
I'm fascinated to find out how they're going to put a warlock into War Machine.
Well, I mean, they're just going to have... She's going to have a fury stat and a focus stat, that's all. I'm sure that's what it's going to be.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
When she's in the Kador army, she doesn't have fury. When she's in a Grimkin army, she doesn't have focus. That's probably just what...
Wouldn't it be great, though, if she had a rule where warjacks in her battle group become war beasts?
That would be like fucking off the charts amazing.
Yeah.
Don't hold your breath for that one. But actually, I had a thought that might actually be pretty crazy. What if she just allocates fury or something?
Oh. Well, the problem is the fury generation. She's got to have some way of
regenerating.
Yeah,
she's got to generate it. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, it could be the fact that she damages herself to regenerate fury and then just has a very good healing mechanic of some variety.
Who knows? Yeah. So. This is wanton speculation.
But still, a warlock in War Machine, I believe this is the first time that's ever actually officially happened. So they're going to do something neat. It could be really boring. It could be really cool. We have no idea.
There's journey people.
Warlocks?
Journey people. Like the lessers.
Oh, yeah, the lessers. Yes. That is a factual statement. So if you haven't seen her, which you probably have, but if you haven't, she's on a huge base. Scrapjack has become all buffed, so he's now a walking hut, completing the circle of Baba Yaga-ness, because Baba Yaga, for those of you who are familiar with Russian lore, is a witch that lived in a hut that walked. Little chicken legs.
Oh, and, wow. Weird. Okay, I just saw a post from Will Hungerford, or Will Schick on the forum, and said, just a heads up, the Old Witch is not a partisan. The Kador and Grimkin versions are two entirely separate models.
Whoa.
Weird.
That's really weird.
Old Witch 2 works for Kador, and Old Witch 3 works for Grimkin.
Oh, okay.
That's crazy.
Huh. Oh, so then it won't have the Fury Focus complexity there.
Presumably, yes.
Yeah, so it'll just use the same model for two versions of the Old Witch.
Yeah, okay, yeah, he clarified. Same model, two different card sets.
Yeah, okay, that makes more sense. Which is unfortunate, because it would have been really cool. But, hey, whatever. So there you go. Thank you for clarifying that. So Scrapjack is now a big honkin' walkin' house. She's a battle engine, and she summons Grimkin. And she has a traditional feat, so...
I am loving this model, though. Like, this is one of those things where I'm like, oh, Kator's looking pretty good right now. just because, yeah.
Yeah. So, the final tally is 6 Warlocks, 2 Heavy Warbeasts, 2 Light Warbeasts, 3 Units, and 2 Solos. I will be stunned if this is the only thing that they're released with.
They're definitely getting more. It was confirmed in the forums by Will Schick that this is not the entirety of what they're getting.
Good, 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 good. So, Nick, how do you feel about the Grimkin?
I'm pretty lukewarm. I never was super psyched about the spoilers for them. Just the aesthetic never really appealed to me at all.
Right.
And it still doesn't, except for the tree lady. and the old witch as well, because she's pretty
cool. Yeah,
really cool. But, I mean, I'm basically, you know, I'll reserve judgment. I mean, it's very unlikely I'm going to buy into this faction. I already have 3 factions, and I really like my 3 factions, and I can't, yes. I really don't want to buy a 4th faction. So I'm, like, the chances of me getting another one is extremely low. But, I don't think they might be kind of cool.
Yeah, I also have 3 factions. I like my 3 factions, my Menoth, my Signar, and my Mercs. I like my Mercs, but I never play them because they're always in my Menoth and Signar.
I'm not sure you've literally ever played Mercs, have you?
I have. Okay. Once. But, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it was a Signar list led by Constant Blaze.
Not really.
It was a Merc list because
she's
slightly...
Mercs don't want her. You can
well, because in Mark 2, if you took her in Mercs, what's his name?
Yeah,
Harlan Verth was friendly faction.
The solos you're going to take either way are now friendly faction, yeah.
Exactly, whereas if you took her in Signar, it wasn't. And so, you know, it was really dumb.
I feel like
anyways,
now, I feel she would be better in Signar than she is in Mercs now.
She is now better in Signar.
Because Stormlances.
Yeah. Not just Stormlances. Stormblades with Constance Blades under the one tier Storm Brigade can hit 33 inches on their bottom of one turn.
That seems terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Assuming there's no rough terrain because she can't give up Pathfinder. Anyways, Grimkin. Yeah, okay. So I will admit that the sculpts are better than I expected. I don't like the aesthetic of almost any Hordes faction. I'm a very steel and iron kind of guy. I like my war machines. I like my big honking robots. The only Hordes faction I would have any interest in would have to have really, really clean, elegant looking lines. And none of them are. They're all these horrible, monstrous things, which is fine. I know a lot of people are into that. Most of the people who I know in the local meta who have seen the Grimkin, their response has been, that's cool, I should go paint my Malifaux models because the Grimkin really look like something out of Malifaux.
Yeah, they really do. I know that, and like, I don't really like the aesthetic of Malifaux that much either.
I don't, yeah. But different reasons for that. However, I'm with you. I think the sexy tree lady is cool. I think Zhivaga Anna, the old witch, the new witch is cool. It's a great sculpt.
Yeah, I do really like the sculpt. I presume that she's going to be a battle engine, not a colossal caster, even
right.
though Scrapjack is what she's riding on. But
yes. Also, the Menoth, the priest king guy who's holding the mask, it's a great sculpt. They've already painted it. And
cool. You know, I have to check out these sculpts because I don't know where you're seeing them.
Yeah, they're it's well, I saw it in the video. In the video, they show you the painted model, and he's holding his own face up, basically, which is really cool. Yeah, and so, you know, they did a great job doing the aesthetic for people who are into that kind of thing. And if you don't play Malfoe and you want, you know, kind of a Nightmare Before Christmas faction, this will, you know, that'll this will scratch that itch. Once again, a warning to all of our listeners and to anybody else that this is a limited release faction, so that when they release them at Lock and Load or whenever the hell they're releasing them, that's probably all you're going to get for at least a year, and then, you know, they'll get one model or two models.
Well, I mean, we just don't know. I mean, Convergence's Dry Spell might just be situational because of the whole Mark III transition and all this other stuff, and, like, because they're basically just last in line. Because everyone else has to get their new stuff first, kind of thing. So, the lack of support for Convergence may not be a permanent thing, but yeah, I mean, really, like, you know, Convergence players know that limited factions get less stuff. They've got one release in the what, like, I think 2 or 3 years Convergence has been out.
I think
it's,
yeah.
It's at least two, definitely, probably three, and they've gotten one release. The Prime Conflicts is the single release they've gotten in all that time. So that's pretty depressing. So keep in mind that you can expect that kind of frequency with new models for this faction as well. So that's enough of a reason for me probably not to pick it up. But there's actually some people that like that. They like the idea of being able to buy the whole thing. They're completionists, and they don't want to have to keep buying stuff every time something's released. I think it's crazy, because, yeah, I don't know, whatever. But,
yeah, new stuff is neat. Yeah. It will be really interesting to see what the rules these guys come out with when they drop, and to see how they play. And then once again, it's one of those things where a lot of the times the way Privateer Press envisions their models and the way that they actually play on the table are very, very divergent. So I'll be curious to see if they're, you know, super resilient dudes or actually super resilient, or if they're too super resilient or whatever. So that'll be neat. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this podcast. Again, if you have any feedback about anything we've said, I am positive that we have gotten things wrong, just because we're literally flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of information to get wrong even, but
yes.
But I mean, this is just kind of initial impressions. They look kind of cool. Probably not going to buy into them, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Also, you know, not that anyone from Privateer Press listens to us, but if they did, hey guys, we love what you're doing, but if you could give more love to the factions that exist rather than creating new factions, that would be even better, because we would love to have some light cavalry and retribution. We would love to have some light cavalry and mercenaries. We would just love to have the tweaks to bring everything else up to the power level of Stormlances, etc., etc., etc.
You mean nerf Stormlances? That's what I heard.
Got in a lot of trouble for that statement. Okay, on that note, Nick, are you painting anything?
I am currently just getting the last of my stuff painted for the OTC. I still need to paint a Manticore and an Arcanist, or sorry, an Artificer.
Oh, cool. I still have to base my Grenadier. It's semi-based, but I'd like to get that finished.
I just finished painting Todd's Helios that I'm borrowing.
Yes, I saw that. It's a beautiful chocolate-covered
Helios. It's his. He picked the color scheme. I just painted it for him. It's not what I would have gone with, but, I mean, it looks all right. It matches his army, so it's all good.
Yep. No, it looks good. You guys can check out Nick's recent Helios paint job, and Kasim hired a local professional painter to do his Desert Hydra. Posted pictures of that up on the website. You can take a look at that too. Looks fantastic. Teeth are very white.
Very, very white. No, James did a great job on that.
James did a great job. Yeah, no question. So yeah, check those out. As for me, I just bought a used lot of Hakazlam for my Infinity, and I spent all day today trying to figure out which model is which, because unlike Privateer Press, everyone with a gun looks kind of the same in Infinity. This is a dude with a gun. This is a woman with a gun. This is a dude with a helmet and a gun. And so I finally managed to figure out what I bought. And I'm going to be painting those before too long, because the only thing I have left to do for my entire OTC list is to put some Tufts of Grass on a Grenadier and to put front arc ticks on 4 models. And then I'm done. However, I did get my Fiora 3, my Eye of Truth, my Sloane, which I'm going to sculpt with her gun facing down, because I'm getting really annoyed with her gun facing up sculpt, and Major Gibbs. And so I will be assembling those and priming them in the near future.
Very cool.
All right. So that's it from us. And next week, we will probably have another battle report. Probably.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.